This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So bold, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for October 13th, 2020. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling podcast feed or our own dedicated feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can find us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to redcircle.com and you'll click the red button there. And you can do a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but it would be certainly appreciated. And thanks to all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. I'm joined, as always, by Case Lowe and Case. This is going to be a quick one this week. There's just, we're going to have a really busy November with a lot of things going on here, but we only have one show to review, one show to preview. I think we should, like, take it easy this week. You know, we're going to enjoy this. We're going to have a nice leisurely show. How are you doing, bud?
Well, yeah, I think as time has shown us, I guess as history has shown us over the past 6 months or so, we are incapable of doing shows that are not 90 minutes on the dot. That is typically where our weekly review shows and our Drag It USA shows typically fall at exactly 90 minutes. I just can't imagine going that long this week with a very average to below average Kyoto KBS Hall show to review and a Kobe Sambo Hall show that has some highlights on it, and then an infuriating main event, so we'll spend some time there. But overall, you know, it's too cold out. I don't like it's in the 50 degrees, but other than that, I'm doing fine.
You know, I had the aftermath of Hurricane Delta come through last weekend, and each time it, like, kicks the season a little bit off here, I was stunned that it's still, like, 80 degrees out here. Like, it's 80 and humid still in South Carolina. I was out earlier today, and I was like, it should not be 60 right now. It's October. It's insane.
Yeah, Chicago had a nice little bump in like 70 degrees for a few days last week, but that was the last of it. It's officially cold here now, and I'm desert people, Mike. I enjoy the dry heat. I enjoy the sweat, and the layers don't do anything for me. I'm not a fan.
I mean, it seems like that you're someone that should probably move to Slab City. It seems like that's your scene. You can go off the grid. You can have whatever art exhibits you want to do, and now you won't be bothered by GCW.
Yes, exactly.
So completely went off there for a second. It's an interesting week in Dragon Gate. I feel like it did more things looking forward into November than it did for what's going to be happening next week. We now know all four title matches for Gated Destiny. The cards almost completely come together now I'm looking at that. And a lot of that came out of the show in Kyoto this weekend. It was on the 11th. Attendance was up. It was 255 versus the last time they were there was in August. I was surprised it's been that long since they've been in Kyoto. And just, you know, you kind of alluded to it earlier, but I feel like that this show, it was a good place-setting show. We got to see the in-ring debut of Dia and Inferno, but for the most part, it was just solid to okay stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's the build to Gate of Destiny is there, because Gate of Destiny, from what has been announced now, is, I feel like, it's a Kobe World level card, and it happens 2 weeks before Kobe World. So I think we're going to get some more meandering televised shows going forward, at least until we hit the beginning of November, and then what should be an insane month that follows. But this Kyoto show happened. I've got a lot of thoughts on Dia Inferno, and other than that, I don't have a ton of thoughts elsewhere on the card.
Yeah, so let's just get into this. Starting off, there was changes on the day of the show, Kazuma Sakamoto had a fever, so they pulled him from the show. Have not seen anything where he said like it was anything COVID related. It just seemed like he was under the weather. Did you see anything from out of Kazuma or Dragon Gate about his health coming out of it?
I certainly have not seen any updates from Dragon Gate. As I quickly scroll through his Twitter, I am not seeing any updates other than him retweeting the future Dragon Gate show. So it looks like a precautionary measure that was taken. It is appreciated, but I have not seen any health updates, positive or negative, since.
Yeah, it just seems like that he just kind of was pulled just because he tested hot. I mean, it just was a fever, and that's how Dragon Gate's operating. Like, his one response to there was he was experiencing a slight fever as precaution and will not compete today in Kyoto. His response was the, I don't even know how to describe it. He basically did a thing where it was looking like that he was like bowing down with like text. It was like M open bracket underscore underscore close bracket M was his response about this. Which, you know,
I'm not well versed in the AOL chat room era of the internet. That seems like something that probably belongs more so in there than on the Twitter homepage.
Yeah. So the card was changed up and he was pulled. That moved Diamante out of a singles match that he was going to have with Jimmy. Kagetora was plugged in there. Diamante was then moved to the semi-main event. The opener was a six-man tag. The Toriumon Generation team of Masato Yoshino, Susumu Yokosuka, and Tsuji Kondo versus the unaffiliated team of the Open the Twin Gate champion Jason Lee, Yosuke Sanmaria, and Ho-Ho Lun. Kondo over Lun in 13 minutes and 18 seconds with a King Kong Lariat.
A lot of Kondo and Maria in this match. An interesting choice when I think there were perhaps more talented people in there. Could have used a lot of Kondo versus Lee. I think that would have been fun. Even Yokosuka versus Maria is a nice combination, but we got a lot of Kondo-Maria, which is perhaps the least interesting pair you could get here.
Yep, it was just shenanigans with Maria. Yoshino basically had the night off. Good for him. And it was something that it was like mainly Maria in this match. It was a nice, easy day for Yoshino, Yokosuka, Lee, and Lun. Lun did get in towards the end, and they finally things picked up. There was a deep schoolboy that they got, that Lun got right into the finish before he got absolutely murdered with a King Kong Lariat. 2.5 stars. It was not a bad match. It just was a shenanigan opener, which was, I mean, this is sometimes we get with Yosuke Sanmaria. And it's not the kind of Maria that I like. So it's just like, okay, this is happening. I'm glad that Yoshino's taking it easy. Those were my big takeaways.
Well, and Jason Lee's a champion now. Jason Lee deserves a night off. He's a hardworking man. Okay, he's got gold around his waist. He can take a night off if he's opening in Kyoto. Good for him.
Yeah. And then when you also like look at like Yokosuka, you would think there'd be maybe a little bit of build up towards that that title match at Gate of Destiny. No, that happened in later on in the show. It just was there. That led us to the singles match on the show. Kagetora versus Jimmy. Kagetora won with the Gura Makakari with an 11 minutes and 18 seconds over Jimmy. And it was nice seeing Jimmy and them do stuff. The one thing that's worth saying, this Kyoto crowd kind of sat on their hands a lot during the show. Because I thought that the ring work on a lot of the stuff was really at a high level, but the crowd was just dead.
Yeah, this is one of those matches that if it happens in Osaka number 2, or even from what we've seen from Kobe Samba Hall lately, I think we'd both be a little bit higher on this match, because it's really nice to see Jimmy being booked on these shows and improving the way that he is. I thought individually this was a terrific performance from Jimmy. And what was the original booking here? Diamante versus Jimmy?
Right.
Yeah, I'd like to see that at some point, because I'm sure Diamante has, he'll take like a monkey flip to the floor or something, some ridiculous lucha bump that he's got stored up for Jimmy. But Kagetora and Jimmy work well together. This was a nice little 3-star match, appropriate for what it was on the card, worked well given the substitution later on in the day. I like this a lot. Jimmy is really improving, and it's nice to see.
Yeah, like this was really something that Jimmy got to show off his improvement. I mean, he still has like insane flying skills with that, and he's the one guy who hasn't really cut from everyone else who decided just to gain a lot of weight during quarantine. I still don't know the full story about why Benkei decided to gain 30 pounds and lose even more of it. It just seems like he's bored. But it's something where Jimmy, like, we're getting to see, like, this is probably the most we've seen of Jimmy by himself in the ring, and I came away really impressed by him. The one thing that, like, it was the thing I'd like to see him work on is some of the strikes, especially against someone like Hagatora, who's known for, like, the slaps that get a good noise out of it. It didn't necessarily, like, add up, but I felt like that this, getting 11 minutes to see Jimmy's making a step forward, and I would hope to see more of him up and down the cards.
What about the class of 2020? They are awfully impressive, and they were in match three.
Yes, match three was the class of 2020 offer match. This had UT teaming up with Takeda Kame, the shortest team on the roster. I think that's fair to say.
It has to be. I can't imagine. I don't want to see a shorter team than that.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, combined, they are probably a combined 10'6" if you had one of them sitting on the other's shoulders. However, the other team does have a long boy in it, and Madoka Kakuta and Kento Kabune. Kento Kabune scored a pin on UT with his version of the straight jacket suplex hold in 14 minutes and 23 seconds, the second longest match on this show.
Yeah, they got a lot of time here. I thought it was not the most impressive match we've seen from the class of 2020. They've had better matches. They've had higher profile matches. But we now see them assimilating into the mid-card of Dragon Gate, where it doesn't feel insane to see a match entirely carried by the rookies and then UT, who is reasonably and realistically the lowest ranking roster member there is of someone on the main roster. So for them to get this much time, I think it's a huge seal of approval.
Yeah, and UT worked well here, but this really was the story of Kame, Kabune, and Kakuta. And really, it was, like, interesting stuff where it started off with UT and Kabune just trying to power each other around, just, like, muscling each other. And, of course, Kabune, the bigger guy, was able to get the advantage out of there. And then Kakuta rocked Kame a lot, and it was really effective stuff, like, Kakuta's starting to feel himself. We're starting to get a sense out of it. Last week, you did the appropriate tag. Maybe he is someone that you put some muscle on, and he's going to be like a power junior, like Shingo Takagi. And you kind of get to see a little bit of that. Maybe I don't know his fluency. I don't know if he's a podcast guy. Maybe he was like, yeah, you know what? I listen to Case and Mike. He seems like I could be a Shingo Takagi guy, because I felt like we saw some of that out of him on the show.
There's a moment where Kakuta gets a hot tag and UT's in the ring, and his first instinct, Kakuta's, is to attempt a bicycle kick. It was actually on Takeda Kamai, and Kamai ducked out of the way. But for him to come out of the stable like an angry, pissed off horse, like a stallion, and go for that bicycle kick on what might have been his first move of the match, really, really liked it.
Just being like, well, I'm tagged in now I'm gonna kick people's faces off.
It was really 0-60. It was nice to see.
I like that, though, because he is the big X factor we had for the first few months of his career. Now he's just like a guy who's gonna come in here, take off heads, and I like that a whole lot. This was a match where, like, Kamei's, I feel like his ring style is coming together a little bit quicker than the other two's, because, like, he had, like, this awesome evade out of a crab hold. Like, it looked like there was a moment where Kabune was going to put him in a Boston Crab. Instead, he, like, did, like, a flip out of it, like a mini Taharis or Rana into a pinning hold, and I thought that was really rad. And just the idea that Takeda Kame's character is that he is smaller, but he probably is more awareness of what can work in a wrestling ring to his advantage than either of the other two.
I think that's a very fair assessment. I do not disagree with that. I'll hit you with the double negative there. I think that's an astute
okay.
point.
And then the finish, we already see that they were using the discus lariat as the big move for Kakuta going forward. Now we get to see a straight jacket German out of Kabune. I thought that was really solid one. Shout out to Akira Tozawa there in a way. And I thought that it's an appropriate finishing hold for him. And I thought that was a pretty rad way to end a match that, sadly, the crowd was not into a whole lot of stuff until later on the show, but I still went 3.25 stars on this. I thought that this was a solid match, and it's nice to see the class of 2020 get a lot of time and work well together and getting plugged in with main roster members.
I'm right there with you, same exact rating.
All right, and then we had match four. This was a Toriumon versus Dragon Gate tag team match. Ultimo Dragon and Genki Horiguchi versus Benkei and Kota Minenora. And we thought that this might be a thing where we thought that Benkei was going to eat a backslide, but we should have gone to the simple thing of, oh, wait, they're building up a Twin Gate match, as Genki Horiguchi got the backslide from heaven on Kota Minora in 12 minutes and 33 seconds. And, you know, I thought that this was like good stuff. And then seeing the chemistry between Genki and Minora has further escalated my excitement for their upcoming Twin Gate match.
That's exactly it. I really liked this. I was surprised, even though it's the backslide, so it doesn't hurt Minora at all. I was really surprised to see Minora take the pin, especially because moments before he was pinned, he and Horiguchi were going through some sort of grappling sequence. Horiguchi attempts a backslide from heaven. Minora rolled through and just hit him with a straight forearm shot that looked like it knocked Horiguchi out cold. And I'm sitting on my couch with my computer, like, yelling, pin him, like, oh my god, if this is the finish, this is the best finish the company's ever done. And then from there, Minora went to the gang, and it was countered once again into the backslide from heaven. Really strong match. I thought Benkei and Ultimo are a really fun pairing in the limited interaction they had here. And you're exactly right. Horiguchi and Minora have really good chemistry, and I'm really excited to see big match Horiguchi make the return at Gate of Destiny.
Yeah, and like, Benkei and Ultimo had, like, this chemistry where Benkei was just, like, muscling his way out of the lucha holes. He was like, No, I'm not doing this.
It was great.
It was great, yeah. And it's something that, like, it just was really solid stuff. And after the match, Genki Horiguchi celebrated kind of went over to Minora and said, ha, I won. Now you felt the backslide. Now we'll see you again in Osaka. And another, like this is a show that nothing was bad, but everything was generally okay to good. And this was another, like, 3.25-star match. I thought that this was solid stuff.
I went 3.5 on this. I liked it quite a bit.
You know what? I could see that. I could see, like, especially with Kakuta clocking Genki, that would have been like an instant quarter star for each.
What it was. As soon as Minora connected with that forearm, I was like, oh my god, this he just knocked him out. Like, I was so into that, like, flash strike finish. It ended up not coming to fruition, but that spot alone made this match a little bit better.
I like to imagine that maybe KZ has a strike clinic with Torimon Generation. You know, like, where he's like, all right, here's how I do my elbow smash. Here's how I do my uppercut. Let me see what you have. And the idea that Kota Minora has, like, the forearm from God would be such a fun thing that, like, he suddenly just gets flash pins by popping people in the jaw. I think that would be a lot of fun to go. And then, of course, you also have Keisuke Okuda. I mean, former MMA guy. I feel like that they should just spend the rest of the year just knocking people out, and it would be a blast.
I need to ask someone if KZ is leading classes in the dojo now. I don't know about that. I'm very curious to see.
I mean, with what we've said about the Bantam style, as we've kind of dubbed it, you have to think that that's a possibility. Because it does feel like that people who've come up over the last few years have really taken after a style that is very similar to KZ, at least how KZ's had his big matches. So
very,
I wonder,
so.
I would not be surprised if he's not leading a day or two. And maybe there still is the ring work movement classes done by Dragon Kid. You know, he's going to break dance in the ring, and you're going to learn how, like, to control your body with that. So I have heard about those classes. Have you heard about DK's classes?
Yeah, there's. I mean, for those that don't know, the Dragon Gate Dojo typically works with one or two wrestlers leading classes per day. I know Yoshino does a lot of cardio. Dragon Kid, just, again, he controls and contorts his body in various ways, and the rest of the roster has to try to do what he does. And then it's sort of a filtering cast through there. And again, I'm never sure who is exactly teaching what at what time, but I would be interested to know that, you know, I think KZ is experienced enough now to be in the dojo. So I will try to come up with an update on that, because I'm very curious.
Yeah. Of course, the worst cardio guy there was Tozawa. Tozawa would have them run 10Ks.
There are some stories of Shima in the dojo and him. It's just like, hey, today we're biking a marathon. Like, we're doing 26.2 miles today. Like, let's get going. Of stuff equivalent to that of, again, you show up for your wrestling school practice. Like, was it a headlock class today? She'd be like, actually, we're biking through all of Japan. That is today's activity.
We're going to see all the sights in Greater Hyogo Prefecture.
It's the greatest tourist destination you can get, is just biking through Japan with Shima and also being in the dojo at the same time.
Yeah. I had to think KZ's involved at some portion, or at least there's some inspiration there. Speak of inspiration, we got a really inspired semi-main event with Team Boku of Naruki Doi, Ryotsu Shimizu, and Punch Tomonaga versus BB Hulk, Takashi Yoshida, and Diamante. Originally, this was going to be Kazuma Sakamoto, as we talked about before. Punch.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Tomonaga got the win after he countered the Cyber Bomb in 11 minutes and 11 seconds, and I don't think RED gets what Osu is.
Look, Team Boku, it's gotta fix itself quickly, because I was not into this. I'm not into the Kobe Sambo Hall match. It's not what I want. It's the problem is that it's being treated like a main event act, and it is not that, and it is gravely concerning.
Well, I mean, if Punch Tominaga is getting a triangle gate shot with your new proto unit, then you have some questions to be made.
Yeah, I thought this was the worst thing on the show. I was not into this at all.
I liked that Punch Tominaga worked well with Dwayne Shimizu. Like, Tominaga has been better in the ring as of late, and that's like my biggest takeaway out of this match.
Yeah, no, well, we went over the list of the great Punch Tominaga matches about a month ago now, and you're right, he's not, I don't know what it is, but he is better. Now, what better means to Punch Tominaga is an interesting story, but he's not embarrassing himself in the ring, but I just, this was just not what I was looking for.
Yeah, and after the match, Team Boku challenged for the Triangle Gate at Gate Destiny. However, there is a stipulation with this match. It is going to be, if Team Boku loses, then Ryotsu Shimizu character is discontinued. So this really might just be a transitional thing. We might be seeing whatever Shimizu is going to be coming out of this. But we'll talk more about that Triangle Gate as we get closer to Gate of Destiny. And then we have our main event. It is the Dragon Gate versus RED 8-man tag team match. The Dragon Gate team, this was a big face-off Road to main event. This was Yamato, KZ, Keisuke Okuda, and Dragon Daya versus the people to be facing off at, or are paired off against at this point, and Ada, Kaido Ishida, Kai, and Dia Inferno. Inferno got the win after a mass grip in 16 minutes and 7 seconds.
What do we think? I mean, I will say up top, the night before the show happened, and I was not watching this show live, I watched it Sunday morning. The night before the show happened, though, I was buzzing with excitement for Dia Inferno. Just could not believe that this character that came across so well in Korakuen was already going to wrestle. He wrestled in the house shows over the weekend and then wrestled here. What did you think of the debut?
I'm conflicted. I think that the ring work is there, but I look at the mask and that must be hell to wrestle in. You know, like being able to see out of it, being able to breathe in that mask, like it's more restraining than Drago's mask ever was. It looks like it's more rubber on top of whomever's head it is. But I feel like the ring work was great. I just wonder about the mask, because it's a great look. Don't get me wrong there. I just look at him like, that must suck to wrestle in, especially like a nearly 20-minute match.
Do we think, after what we've seen here, and Dia Inferno was wrestling really more of a brawl-based style, there were no in-ring indicators as to who it might be, with the exception of, I just don't think this person is tall enough to be Shun Skywalker. But do we think this is a character that is, we'll say, getting unmasked before the end of 2020? Or is this a long-term Darkness Dragon-like character?
I just look at that mask and it makes me think that you can't, that after a while, whomever's in that mask is going to be like, we have to do something about this. Because I'm just like looking at that mask, I'm like, okay, you're wearing a full body suit, one. You're wearing a jacket over it, and you're wearing that mask. That can't be fun. That can't be fun at all. I'm still of the belief, And at least the style-wise, and especially seeing them in the ring, unless they're having multiple people play Dia Inferno, different shows, I'm still of the belief that I am now pretty certain it's not Shin Skywalker. It's not Shin. But unless they're like changing people up there, I think it either has to be Yoshioka or someone to be debuted. And, you know, I love the idea of having an eternal rival, like how Dragon Kid had Darkness Dragon. But I just look at that mask. Like, am I off base thinking that that mask is just seems like a pain?
No, I think from what we saw here, and I could end up being very wrong, and in 2022, we're still talking about Dia Inferno, but the impression that I got was maybe this is a short-term character, and we will still be getting an eventual reveal out of this, because I just think the in-ring style, unless we see a drastic shift, is one that, to say it would be long in the tooth would be incorrect, because it's not something that I would get sick of, but I don't think it's conducive to the Dragon Gate house style. And so I think either that needs to change, or something else needs to change. But the character, the way it was presented, I was super entertained by it. I really, really liked this match for the Dragon Dia versus Dia Inferno stuff, and for the Brave Gate challenges that we'll talk about in just a second. But I do think the way the Inferno character exists right now, it either will have to change or it will quickly become extinct.
Yeah, and especially, like, the finish was a master rip. It was after Inferno bit Dia. And, like, that's something like, okay, all right. And it was, like, brawling. Like, the most that Inferno did, like, actual wrestling-wise, other than, like, brawling, was reversing moves and hitting a lung blower. Like, I like took notes of, like, what, just see what it is, 'cause I'm so fascinated by the idea that this character exists. And you do think, like, that this is either a step along the way or going to be a short-term thing. That all being said, the crowd was really into it, and we got Dia calls. Like, the crowd likes this. So, like, it's not like, I'm not, like, saying I don't know how long this has a lifespan for. That's not me saying that I dislike it. I'm just wondering, like, logistically. Like, because I think that it's something that I still believe that Dragon Dia needs a rival. And if it's going to be something that, like, whoever this is unmasked, or they change the mask up, and now we have, like, that kind of thing leading to, I'm not even calling for, like, an absolutamente run back, but I would like to see, like, this continue. It's just, I just wonder logistically and just how it is that some things probably are going to need to change for the long term.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, but the one thing that doesn't need to change, it looks like we're about to come to the end of it, but everything has been executed perfectly so far. The Okuda-Ishida interactions. Mike, you have the floor.
I mean, this is something where this was the best part of the match, and I know that we've been super high on this thing, but the match was going, and there was brawling, and you had all the good face-offs, and everyone, like, excelled in the face-off, but then when Ishida and Okuda got into the ring with each other and just started forearming, elbowing, kicking, punching each other, that felt like it was like, okay, this is a big time feud. And this, like, makes me think that, all right, when we come to Gate of Destiny, we're going to see the conclusion of what was the feud of the year. And it just, each time I see this, they don't take nights off in this feud. They keep on, like, adding new twists and turns to it. And now we finally get the idea of, like, we're coming to a head soon, but I want to rip your face off. And that was the thing that, like, as soon as they had, like, their face off, that's when this match really kicked a gear that this became the clear match of the night.
Yeah, it's just their interactions here were unbelievable. It's really, and people will roll their eyes, whatever. I know I'm right on this. I mean, the Okuda-Ishida interactions feel like these big late 80s, early 90s All Japan six-man tags, where, and it's not on the level of this, but the atmosphere and the tone is similar to Misawa and Jumbo tearing at each other in a six-man tag. I mean, it really has this almost biblical proportions feel to it, and I can't wait to see the eventual conclusion of this feud.
And then when you look at how Dragon System does, like, feuds and long-term feuds, this kind of is, like, set apart of that. This is something that's been a constant focus for both of these guys for a full calendar year. Like, the only Brave feud that had this long of a build was Ricochet and Pac. And this is different. This is actually, like, feels like a blood feud and not proving a point on who's the better flyer.
And the beautiful thing is, will get interactions between these two for the rest of their careers. It's not like the heat is going to go anywhere. I think this has a chance to, again, like a Ricochet versus Pac, and unfortunately, you know, Pac left so soon after that Bravegate feud ended, and really, maybe that's the wrong example, because they started teaming pretty much shortly after that feud ended, but this kind of has one of those deals where, you know, 3 years from now, we're going to have some nine-man tag at Cork and Hall, and Ishida and Okuda are going to get a spot to kick the ever-living crap out of each other, and it's going to get over off the back of what has happened this year in this feud.
Yeah, it's a big groundwork thing. And then Ada and KZ, their face-offs were good here as well as Yamato versus Kai. Really makes you want to have a no-ropes match between Yamato and Kai. It does feel like that Yamato's tapping into something that we have not seen in a long time.
I hope they do it. They're not going to do it at Gate of Destiny, obviously, but I really hope they do it at some point, because it's been 6 years since we've seen a no-ropes match now, and I think
the last one was
Yamato T-Hawk, right?
Yes.
If there was ever another one to do, it's Yamato versus Kai.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something that you could run back this match at Kobe World with this.
Very true.
And that's it for Kyoto. It's a good show. Like, it's not like an exceptional show. It was very much a place-setting show that was really enjoyable. The main event and then the class of 2020 is the stuff to really seek out. But, you know, it's a two-hour show, really. If you, like, trim things out there, you'll get through it pretty quickly. It'll be up on the network through the 17th. It was a good time.
And watch the main event. Really good. 3.75 from me.
Same. And then we only have one televised show that's going to be happening this week. They're going to be back in the friendly confines of Sambo Hall on the 17th. It's a 6 p.m. Japanese Standard Time start. That means it's 5 a.m. for the East Coast. That means it is 4 Central as well. And is UTC would be at 9 a.m. So 9 a.m. and then 10 a.m. in London. I have an app right now to make sure I get these times right, Case. That's what I was stalling for, was make sure I got all the times right on that.
And I like it. Time zone king Mike Spears.
Time zone king Mike Spears. I mean, I'm in the worst time zone, but, you know, it is what it is.
You can't win them all.
Can't win them all. So, interesting Kobe Sambo Hall show. I'm going to run down the card quick, and then we can give our thoughts. I feel like that there's some, I know there's one match that you have a lot of takes on, and I have an interesting thing to propose in the opener.
Yeah, I've got a lot of big picture thoughts on this card, so go for it.
All right, the opener is the Dragon Gate team of Benkei, Kota Minoura, and Jason Lee versus the Class of 2020. It's Kamude, Kamei, and Kakuta. Tag match in match two, it is Yosuke Sanmaria and UT of Dragon Gate Army versus Misaki Mochizuki and Kinki Horiguchi. Mochizuki was at the N1 finale show, and that's why he wasn't in Kyoto. Match 3, Yamato and Keisuke Okuda versus Kai and Kaito Ishida. So straight build for a Gate of Destiny right there. Match 4 is a very interesting match. It is all Toriumon as its Ultimo Dragon, Masato Yoshino, and Susumu Yokosuka versus Dragon Kid, Tsuji Kondo, and Kagatora. A lot of history between these six guys. Match 5, semi-main event. Another preview match. KZ and Dragon Daya versus Ada and Daya Inferno. And your main event, it is a Triangle Gate preview match with the full Team Boku of Naruki Doi, Ryo Saito, Ryotsu Shimizu, and Punch Tominaga versus RED of BB Hulk, Takashi Yoshida, Diamante, and Hyo.
Look, I hate that main event. I don't like a thing about it. I don't think that match looks good on paper. And the fact that this Team Boku gimmick is headlining a show over KZ and Daya versus Eita and Inferno, I just don't get it. I mean, I did not think I was going to come on this show, you know, after August and complain about how little Dragon Gate was doing with Eita. I thought, if anything, it would be the opposite, that he would be shoved down our throats in these main events. But for them to not headline this show with that, or even Yamato and Okuda versus Kai and Ishida, I think it is utterly ridiculous. I hate that main event. I'm not looking forward to sitting down and watching it, because I think it's a lot of guys that are going to bring out the worst instincts than others. And you've got your Dreamgate preview match right before with your two most interesting characters in Dragon Daya and Daya Inferno as well. It is an infuriating thing to look at. But outside of that main event, especially for a Kobe Sambo Hall show. Mike, I think this card looks terrific.
Yeah, I mean, everything here outside the main event, you cover that as well. My thoughts. I'm not as down on the main event, but when I see Yoshida, Diamante, and Hio in a main event, I figure, okay, my expectations are lowered. But you have the excellent preview match as a semi-main. It's going to be a match where you can't really hide Inferno, so we'll probably get more ideas about the wrestler and the character there. Match 4 with Ultimo, Yoshino, and Yokosuka versus DK, Kondo, and Kagetora. That should be a whole lot of fun. I mean, you have Kondo and Kid teaming, and then you have Kagetora going up against his former tag team partner, Yoshino going against Kondo, Ultimo versus Dragon Kid. A lot of interesting like permutations that go on with that match. Match 3, straight hype. I mean, that's a hype match right there. I mean, again, you're not going to be able to hide each other in this match, so you're going to get a bunch of good Kai versus Yamato, Ishida versus Okuda, Okuda versus Kai, Ishida versus Yamato. You can't go wrong there. Match 2, that's just seeing who that is there. Don't have super high expectations, to be honest, but it should be fun. And then match 1, they are doing something with the class of 2020, and I'm throwing it out there and calling my shot. Do not be surprised if one of these 3 kids of the class of 2020 scores a monumentous upset, gets a flash pin on Ben K. I'm putting my shot out there, Case.
I think you're going to be right, too. Mike pitched this to me last night. I was annoyed that he thought of it instead of me. I would like to take credit for this take that will likely be accurate, because it's either, you know, Minoru's going to pin one of these kids, or just given the momentum that we've seen from them, where Kakuta won in Fukuoka, the whole generation won at Korakuen Hall, we saw Kabune win at Kyoto this past week, and I think the kids are winning again. They're not pinning a champion, which means I think they're rolling up Ben K for a win. I think you're right on the money there.
And I'll go one further. Turtle Coon's going to debut his flash pen.
Ooh. That, you know, when he debuted, I would have said Takedo Kamai will never pin Ben K in his entire career. But given sort of the upward trajectory we've seen from Kamai and Ben K being cycled down, I'm not worried about his future at this moment, but he is just being cycled down the card for a little bit. I can't rule it out. It is an interesting time to be alive, but I cannot rule it out.
Yeah, so really interesting Kobe show. We'll see how right I am. I'm either incredibly right, somewhat right, or a big dummy. I'm totally okay with all 3 of those. And a lot to like sink your teeth into, even if the main event is probably going to be... I mean, you can punch Shimonaga in a main event with Hio. I mean, as much as I love my small leopard son, I don't have any misguided aspirations about him in his career. Maybe we get to see Diamante take a crazy dive off of something Shimizu does. That's what I'm hoping for at that main event.
It's match 3. It's match 3 fodder. It has no business being a main event. I'm really annoyed about that. It's Saito and Tominaga in a main event. Forget the RED side, which is a weak-looking RED lineup, but even then, it's Saito and Tominaga in a main event. I just hate that, because I really like the rest of this card. Even if that was match 3, I wouldn't mind it, but in the main event, that's just unacceptable to me.
No, I don't disagree with you there. Any other big thoughts you have before we get out of here? We said this was going to be a little bit of a tight one, and this is. We have all the big matches at Gated Destiny together. I don't know if they're going to be building up anything else there. And I mean, I think next week on the 25th is Nara, and that's going to close out October. Again, this was kind of a chill month. It's going to kick up very quickly. We have one last televised show before Gated Destiny on the 3rd.
Yeah, no, it's a slow week. It's a necessary one because it is such a slow week. And Mike and I will do plenty of coverage of this match in a few weeks on this show. But Dragon Gate Network uploaded Gate of Destiny 2015. It is a sneaky best show ever contender in the Dragon yes. System universe. I don't think it is their best show ever, but it is legitimately up there. And the main event is Shingo Takagi versus Masaki Mochizuki. It is a 5-star match. It is... it finished number 11 in the Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll that year in a New Japan that still had Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles, and fell really only behind those matches and the Sasha Banks and Bayley matches from NXT. And it is the, in my opinion, greatest match in Dragon Gate history. I rewatched it last night. I maintain that opinion. I have been reviewing essentially every show, or at least every Cork and Hall and every big show for voiceofwrestling.com since 2015. I gave that match 5 stars, and I have not given 5 stars to a Dragon Gate match ever since. So we're on a 5-year drought of perfection, but it will never top what Shingo and Mochizuki did. That is on the Dragon Gate Network. Again, we'll talk about it more in a few weeks, but that is out there. Since it's a slow week, Kyoto's really non-essential viewing. Go watch that match instead.
And I'll say this. I'm revising something. It is a 5-star match in my books, too.
Yes.
It is the last Dragon Gate 5-star match they've had. And I'm looking at Cage Match right now. We know this is not the case, but it is listed as a Wrestling Observer Newsletter 5-star match. So,
we'll
get a lot into this match, and we're going to do our recommendations because they're putting up all the Gate Destinies next week or the week after next. But we'll be talking about that soon. But I think that's going to do it, Case, unless you have anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here.
No, let's get out of here.
All right, so that's it for this week on Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back next week talking about Kobe Sambo Hall as we are going to have October soon coming to the close as we get into November 2020, the biggest month in Dragon System history. So you can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case on Twitter at underscore in your case. And I'm at Fujiheya with 2 eyes like Don Fuji. So for Case, I'm Mike, and we'll catch you next time on Open the Voice Gate. Take care.